On December 11, 2020, the United States Food and Drug Administration issued the first emergency use authorization for a vaccine for the prevention of coronavirus disease 2019, also known as COVID-19, caused by severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2, also known as SARS-CoV-2, in individuals 16 years of age and older. The emergency use authorization allows the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine to be distributed in the United States. We expect that this will also happen for the Moderna vaccine in the coming weeks. Hey, and welcome to the Millennial Health Podcast. I'm Dr. Jayshree Allen, a board-certified family physician who's passionate about the health of my fellow millennials. I know we're booked and busy, but your first wealth is your health. So I'm taking some of my most important health messages and bringing them here to you on this podcast. My goal is to share some valuable information and draw awareness to some important health topics. But I encourage you to please consult your physician for personalized medical advice. So on today's episode, we're talking about this vaccine. It's also the only thing in the news at this point in time. It's also really fitting that this will be our season finale. You know, I launched the Millennial Health Podcast in February of 2020. And after watching a few YouTube videos and reading a few blogs, I put together a little script, I sat at my computer, and I recorded. And it's been such a journey since then. I don't even use the same microphone anymore. I used to edit all on my own. I now have a producer. So wow, time has really flown by. But you know, balancing that with a full-time clinical practice, fortunately, I slipped a little on the consistency. And not to mention, it's been a rough year. I think really hashtag 2020 should just mean something going forward. You know, I lost three close family members this year, and I learned it's one thing to send your condolences. It's another to be the person to choose what casket someone's buried in, you know, decide what happens to their belongings after they've left. So I send love and light to everyone who has lost a loved one this year. It has been rough. You know, it's taught us about the fragility of life and prioritizing the people and the things that are truly important to us. But here we are in this wonderful Millennial Health community. We're almost 3,000 downloads later. We're on episode 25, and I appreciate you all so much. Thank you for listening, and let's check out this new episode one last time for this season. So joining us today is Dr. Jacinda Abdul-Mutakabir. She's a Detroit native. She attended Howard University, where she obtained an undergraduate degree in sports medicine, earned her Doctor of Pharmacy degree at the University of St. Joseph, and completed a postdoctoral fellowship in infectious diseases, as well as a master's in public health at Wayne State University. Jacinda is currently an assistant professor of pharmacy practice at Loma Linda University in Loma Linda, California. Welcome to the Millennial Health Podcast, Jacinda. How are you?
Thank you so much, Dr. Allen, for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I'm excited to be joined, you know, to be joining another Jay. Yes. I go by Jay as well, so I'm super excited.
But I want to dive right in. I mean, this is the talk of the town. This is what everyone wants to know about. Many of us are getting surveys from our jobs to ask if we are interested in the vaccine. So we're all trying to make an informed decision. So can you give us a brief overview of the vaccines that are currently available or soon to be available in the United States? And as we're recording this and when we release it, we'll be talking about Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine. So tell us a little something. What do we need to know?
Okay, so sounds great. I'm super excited to dive into these vaccines, mostly because with me being in infectious diseases, I've been researching this for the last, 8 months? So we know that, as you briefly discussed, we have the Moderna and then we have the Pfizer and BioNTech vaccines. So we know that the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines are of the mRNA variety. And what mRNA does is it actually sends a message to the cells on how to code for a specific variant. And in this case, it tells the cells how to actually code for a particular part, and we'll get more into this later, of the coronavirus vaccine. And then our bodies go ahead and they make antibodies to that actual coding of that specific part of the coronavirus. So even in my brief explanation of this, these are spectacular vaccines. This is just spectacular science. I, you know, being a scientist, I'm very excited about these vaccines. So we know that we have those two, and we know that we could start distributing those in the United States as early as tomorrow. We know that we'll likely be getting started with these vaccines super early. We know that the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines require 2 shots, right? Mm-hmm. So we know that you get 1 injection and then you come back for 28 and 21 days for the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, respectively, mm-hmm. to get a second injection of those vaccines. And we'll get more into why we do that later. But ultimately, it's to bolster just that immune response that we have. And then we know that when we start giving these vaccines, that it'll be tiered or it'll be staggered, or everybody won't be able to get these vaccines at once, right? So we'll start with what's called phases. So we'll have phase 1A and 1B. And that's when they'll start giving those healthcare practitioners, the individuals that are actually going to be seeing that coronavirus directly, they'll start getting those first. Our essential healthcare workers and our essential but non-healthcare workers, they will get the vaccines after those individuals that are healthcare practitioners, but those are in our top tiers. Then we'll start giving those vaccines to those individuals that are in those heavily affected chronic health communities, that being those individuals that are older, that being those individuals that have hypertension, diabetes, are obese, those communities that more often and are more likely to experience severe COVID-19. And then we also know that the vaccine has only been tested in adults. So we know that we do not have much information and how these vaccines will fare in individuals that are less than 16 years old. We don't know how these vaccines will fare in pregnant women and lactating women. And we don't know how these vaccines will fare in those individuals that are immunocompromised. And we do know that these studies have included a certain amount of Black, Native American, Hispanic, minoritized communities. We know that this is important because these are the communities that are heavily affected. I often get questions or often see comments on Instagram, on Twitter. This looks like Tuskegee. This looks nothing like Tuskegee. Mm-hmm. Tuskegee was mainly Black people. So it's about less than 30% of these communities that are included in these studies. Inclusively when we think about just these minoritized communities. So it does not look like Tuskegee. I think that the drug companies did a phenomenal job at including these heavily affected groups, but not exploiting these heavily affected groups. So we know that these vaccines work here, but we know that, but these were not the sole groups tested. And I just really want to harp and I really want to spend some time on that point because I know and I understand just the hesitancy in those communities, in minoritized communities, with the receipt of the vaccine. But I want to be transparent in what I know to be true.
Yes. I appreciate you saying that so much. And I want us to circle back to that conversation again, because I think that is extremely important that we highlight that. But I want, as we are talking to our audience, to really ensure that they understand how this vaccine is working. So you mentioned that you'd touch on it a little later. So let's jump into that. How exactly do these mRNA vaccines work? How new are they? Because, you know, I think a lot of the skepticism is, oh, well, you know, if vaccines take so many years, right, to be created, how did we end up with one in under a year?
So I think it's wise if we just begin with a very brief overview of vaccines. So we have vaccines, and they can either be live or they can be inactivated or very small, weakened pieces of the virus. So we have vaccines that are live. And then, so those are kind of like our, we have them when we think of flu vaccines. So it's like a very muted part of the flu vaccine, and that's injected into an individual. And then the individuals then mount an immune response to the vaccine. And then for those vaccines that are inactivated, and the bulk of our vaccines are inactivated. So when we think about the pneumococcal vaccine and the Hep B vaccine and things like that, and the HIV vaccine. So different vaccines that you'll see that are given, they are often inactivated, and that contains a killed piece of the virus. So a dead piece of the virus inactivated, that's injected into the individual, and then the individual then mounts a response against that vaccine. Mm-hmm. So this vaccine that we have for COVID is new. And it's exciting. And like I said, it's just science at its upteenth degree. So this is an mRNA vaccine. So mRNA exists commonly in our bodies. mRNA is something that everybody has. And it's messenger RNA. So what this does is it gives the cells directions on how to make things. So in respect to the coronavirus, the vaccine or the mRNA vaccine is injected into the individual. And what it does, it provides the cells instructions on literally how to make what's called the spike protein, or something that's very particular to the coronavirus. So it provides the cell with instructions on how to make that spike protein. And then once the cells have that direction, the mRNA is then expelled. And then the body then forms antibodies against that particular spike protein. So in gist, it tells your body how to make the spike protein. And then your body naturally creates antibodies against that spike protein. So it gives your body the textbook, and then and then your body reads that textbook, and then you are good to go. So I think it's brilliant because you don't have to worry about actually being injected with the coronavirus, which is what we know to be a very serious and unpredictable virus. But what you can do is actually have these instructions on how to make a piece of it, and then your body takes care of the rest. I think that this is amazing. I think that this shows that we are in the year 2020. Our first vaccine was created in the 18th century. Here we are, and that was for smallpox. Here we are now with coronavirus in the year 2020, and this shows that we are here. The BBC News kind of summed this up greatly. They said this vaccine is the result of hard work and brilliance. I think that that's honestly what I attribute it to. And we also have to think about the money that's been allocated to the development of this vaccine, billions of dollars. And this isn't something that's just affected one country, one region. No, this is a pandemic. This has affected every sphere of what we know. And it has caused everyone to pour their money, to pour their best scientists into developing these vaccines. So I think, why didn't we have this a month earlier? But I think that this vaccine is definitely on par. I think that it was not fast. And that's something that I often find myself having to tell my community and tell my family members. I am a Black woman. So it's something that I really harp on in my community amongst my friends. It was not fast. It was on task, done in the capacity in which we needed it to be done. It was done quickly, but it was not at the cost of the science. It was not at the cost of adequately evaluating the safety.
And there are some things that were done simultaneously.
Absolutely.
That, you know, would have been done in like a sequential manner. You know, we're watching the news now just before we started recording. And I see that, you know, shipments have already been, you know, are being sent of the Pfizer vaccine right now, but it was just FDA approved. You right. know, under normal circumstances, you wouldn't have created this much of the vaccine already ready for distribution before receiving FDA approval. So it was just that a lot of things were done at the same time, as opposed to waiting for everything to be done before moving on to the next step.
Absolutely.
But nothing was skipped.
Perfect. Perfect. We did not skip anything. It's just this is what the task called for. When we think about the flu vaccine, but was it at the capacity and was it as unpredictable as the coronavirus? Not necessarily. So we had time to, like you say, roll out certain things, and we can do this now, and then we can do this later, then we can do this here. But no, for the COVID-19 vaccine, it calls for, and I think you said that perfectly, for us to do a lot of things at the same time, mm-hmm. all hands on deck. And I think that before we start to move on, it's important for us to know that these mRNA vaccines are not new. Mm-hmm. So they are new to the coronavirus, but in totality, they are not new. We've seen a SARS, we've seen coronaviruses before with SARS. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know, we began to increase our science and increase our research and increase our development of vaccines. So with SARS, we do have an mRNA vaccine there. That's how we knew that the spike protein was significant to the coronavirus. And that's how we knew that it would be wise to target the virus that way. With the Zika virus, there is also an mRNA vaccine for that. However, Zika was not as all-encompassing as the coronavirus has been. Therefore, we did not see the rollout nor need the rollout that we're seeing. However, we do have that science there, that well-studied science there. So I think it's important to also know that it's not, you know, new to vaccine development. It's just new to the coronavirus.
What about some of the safety and like efficacy data around these two coronavirus or COVID-19 vaccines that we have available? I think specifically those are some of the questions I've heard a lot about. You know, the percentages are floating around on the news, 94% and 95%, you know, but could we talk a little more about, you know, the definitions of those and the numbers, the efficacy and the safety and how we're tracking that?
So I guess I'll begin with stating the vaccine was shown to be 95% effective. And I don't think people really know how big that number is to us.
Break it down for us.
When we think about, you know, percent effectiveness in a vaccine, MMR, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, is 98% effective. And that is the best vaccine that we have. So for this one to be 95% effective, my goodness, like just spectacular science there. So let's really just, you know, get into what the study was, break this down into lay terms. Mm-hmm. In this study, this is what we call a phase 3 trial. So you have a phase 1 trial, which kind of just tests, you know, at different doses, like, does this vaccine work, period? Does it work at all? So you often see different doses of the vaccine and things like that being tested in a group of healthy individuals. Actually, the Moderna vaccine only has phase 1 information available. So I'll briefly talk about that. And then we have a phase 2 vaccine, which kind of looks at both the efficacy, like does it work, but it also looks at safety. But then we have phase 3, which is actually a controlled trial, which means you have a group of individuals that actually receive the vaccine, and then you have a group of individuals that don't receive the vaccine. And you can pair efficacy, you can pair safety. Was this effective? So did that vaccine do more than if someone were to receive nothing? So would that vaccine work better than that? So I think it's important we know that in those individuals, so there were a total of 43,548 patients that were included in the study overall. So about half were into each group. So about 21,000 in one group, about 21,000, a little bit over that in the other. And then we know that there were 8 cases of COVID-19 in those individuals that received the vaccination and 162 in those individuals that did not receive the vaccination. So that's how we got to that 95%, because there were 8 cases included in those 21,000 people that received the vaccine. There were 162 cases included in the 21,000 people that did not receive the vaccine, that received nothing. So that's how we get to that 95% effective there. And there were also 10 cases of COVID-19 that were severe. So, and that means those individuals that, of course, were that needed to be intubated and that had that severe decompensation that we see with the COVID-19 cascade. But it's important to know that 9 of those were in the placebo group, were in that group of individuals that did not receive the vaccine. So only one person that has severe COVID-19, and they're included in that 8, that total 8 that actually experienced COVID-19 prior following the vaccination. But that's amazing that even when we see that really serious case, only one of them was in the group that received the vaccination. We can't expect these vaccinations to be 100% effective. And that's not what we went into this. You know, we didn't go into it with that train of thought. But we see just these amazing results in terms of efficacy, probably more than what the study conductors even
expected.
it's really beautiful to see what we saw there. Mm-hmm.
What about the safety, though, in terms of like what could potentially happen in the future or long-term safety data? I think that's the reason for a lot of apprehension as well, that, you know, one of the reasons that we're able to, you know, tell our patients about whether it's like the MMR or pneumococcal or rotavirus, or, you know, we have some time on our side to say, you know, look at the benefit that this vaccine has had to society over time, whereas we don't have that leverage now. So how do we answer that question of safety?
Right. It was actually a conversation I had with some friends of mine. I said, listen, I understand if you need more data to make you feel safe. I cannot control, you know, you feeling safe with getting the vaccine. However, I think it's important to note that, you know, the data collection for these studies is going to continue to be ongoing. So mm-hmm. it's not a yes. one and done. Like, we see these results and then we're finished. We're not going to continue to do research. No. We're going to absolutely, you know, continue doing research with these vaccinations and collecting the safety data and publishing it as soon as it's available. And then, you know, as people start to receive these vaccines, these institutions, these hospitals will develop their own studies to continue to trace, you know, the safety of the individuals that they vaccinate. So we are going to have information, you know, in regard to this. But it's important that we look at, you know, what they saw to be kind of like those more serious and those mild, you know, adverse events. And of course, you know, in the study, they said that there was pain at the injection site, fatigue, headache, and it was more often, you know, with the receipt of the second dose of the vaccine. And the reason that we even do the second dose of the vaccine is really so we can make sure that we bolster that immunity, and we can ensure that, you know, the individuals that receive the vaccine are immune to that virus. Mm-hmm. So more often than not, they saw, you know, the adverse events with the second dose, but the adverse events themselves are minimal. So yes. I think even when we think about a flu vaccine, I often get, you know, pain in my injection site. I get fatigue. I get a headache. I honestly take off the next day because, you know, it kind of takes me out. But I think that we should think about how do you thwart that? How do you kind of combat that? Mm-hmm. Take some naproxen, take some mm-hmm. Advil, you know, maybe take Advil before you get the injection and take some afterwards if need be. Have a Netflix and chill day, you know, take a little break. But I think that we should make that consideration when we get the vaccine. But I think, you know, it's important to know that the adverse events are minimal. Were there deaths in the study? Yes. There were about 6. And those cases could not be attributed to the vaccine. So, and they were in individuals that were greater than 50 years old. I also want to keep in mind that those individuals included in this study did have, while they had stable chronic illnesses, they did have chronic illnesses.
So I think it's, you know, wise that we take that into consideration as well when we think about, you know, those individuals that did expire in the trial. However, it was a very small number and it is not attributed to the vaccine.
To the vaccine. Mm-hmm. One of the other things, I was listening to an interview with Dr. Paul Offit, who is the vaccine god, I guess, of our modern day. And one of the things that I gathered from that conversation, you know, and I see this in my clinical practice, so I think that's why it stuck with me when I heard we talk a lot about the deaths from COVID-19, which are extremely significant, right? I think we crossed 3,000 per day just at the end of last week as we are releasing this episode now. But in my clinical practice, I see a lot of people who survive COVID-19, but have significant complications, what we call this long haulers, whether it's, you know, they end up with blood clots, DVTs, or PEs, clots that have traveled to their lungs, patients that have had strokes, patients who are so tired and just so incredibly weak that they're just having a hard time regaining their strength or their function to go back to work or, you know, back to their usual level of productivity. I referred last week alone two patients to physical therapy who aren't able to like walk any significant distance now after this virus. We've had patients who've come into the hospital who were diagnosed like a month ago or like 2 months ago and are still struggling with hypoxia or dyspnea. So their oxygen saturations are low. They're having shortness of breath. And even though they were diagnosed about a month or 2 months ago, they're still struggling with that even now. So I think that's another thing to consider as we're trying to make our informed decisions about whether or not the vaccine is right for us and our own individual risk, that death isn't the only outcome of COVID-19. There are significant debilitating consequences to this virus as well. You know, talk about this multi-system inflammatory response. I mean, just so many different things to think about when making your decision.
110%. Mm-hmm. I agree. Like anything that you could experience, any type of headache or muscle ache that you could experience with the vaccine is definitely going to be very insignificant in comparison to actually being diagnosed with the virus. So
I want to close with a question for you, and let's make it personal so our audience can see like what we would say, because that's usually what people want to know, right? What would you do? What would you say? What you know, people want to know what you're thinking. So if you're at a dinner table with your immediate family and they turn to you and they say, Dr. Jacinda, the doc of the family, should we take this vaccine? Like, what would you say to them from a personal sort of level?
Right. My parents, they honestly think I wear the Dr. Fauci hat. So, nicknamed Tony. But I think that one thing, and I often get that, you know, these, like I said, these vaccines were made too fast. They're too fast. But I think, you know, one thing that myself and you, Jay, have just said here is, despite the fact that, you know, these are quickly available, there were no steps skipped. Every single, honestly, they probably, I feel like I'm seeing more data, more information in regard to the more transparency with the COVID-19 vaccine than I've ever seen in with any vaccine. Honestly, with most aspects of science, but it was not at the expense of evaluating safety. It was not at the expense of evaluating efficacy. It was not at the expense of the of implementing the science that needed to be used to actually develop these vaccines. So I would say, you know, to remember that. I think that it would be, you know, also to just acknowledge the signs of success that these vaccines have shown. I think that it's important that we look at, you know, the 95% efficacy for two, as we made sure to to describe, this is not the first time an mRNA vaccine has been, you know, developed for use. And for two, the cascade of events and the cascade of ailments that comes with COVID-19 is definitely more significant than anything that you would experience with the vaccination in terms of the most heavily recognized, most heavily seen side effects. So please keep that in mind. And then for three, say I'm at a dinner table with my friends that are healthcare practitioners that are hesitant about the vaccine, I tell them that as we are a part of minoritized communities, it's our time to speak up. You know, it's our time to use the clinical knowledge that we have in terms of study evaluation to really disseminate the information that we know that we see with this COVID-19 vaccine. It's our job to really preach to them, you know, this virus has hit our community hard and we have to be vigilant in mitigating this. And the best way to overcome a virus is a vaccination. Why not do it with a vaccination that has shown great efficacy, minimal adverse events? We have to be vigilant in preaching that to them. We have to be vigilant and holding not only these drug companies accountable, but holding these public officials accountable in how they deliver this information to the minoritized population, meaning that we need to call out these Black voices to really go in and preach to these Black communities. And it's important that you have this platform here so that we can get this message out. We have to really, you know, hit the ground and deliver this information on the vaccine and really try to make sure that our community goes ahead and leads the way there with vaccinations. And then finally, I just want to say we have to continue to wear our masks. Our masks are still going to be important until 70 to 80% of individuals are vaccinated. We don't know, you know, as far as can asymptomatic carriers, can people that don't know they have the virus actually, you know, pass that virus? Meaning if you got the vaccine, does that vaccine actually prevent you from being a carrier? We don't know that. So it's important that you continue to wear your mask, that you are still safe when you're around individuals in your family that have not been vaccinated, that have been vaccinated because you don't know where they may go. So, you know, it's important that we continue to practice those safety measures.
And to even add to what you'd said, your point number three, I'm like still stuck there too. You know, APM Research Lab has been putting out some good data on this. And I think their most recent numbers in early November show that 1 in 875 Black people in the United States have died from COVID-19, not gotten sick, not recovering, not even having some of these complications you and I talked about earlier, are no longer here. 1 in 875. So this is a tool here with this vaccine to help us turn the tides of those numbers, you know, and we're losing our people at a rapid, rapid rate. But Jacinta, thank you so, so, so much for joining us here at Millennial Health. How can we continue to follow you? Where can we find you so we can see all the info that you're going to keep putting out, as I know you will?
Well, I am on Twitter at JCDoesID. So that is my Twitter name. Please feel free to, you know, follow me. I am often there as just an advocate for an increase in cancer screening in Black individuals, an increase in just eliminating disparities in our minoritized communities. So it's always my goal to be a voice there. So feel free to, you know, hop in and see me, you know, on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me today on the Millennial Health Podcast. Remember, this was the last recording of the 2020 season. I hope these 25 episodes have been informational and beneficial to you. We'll be back in January with all new episodes. Reliably, they will be available on the first and third Monday of each month. Because your girl has a podcast producer now, and she keeps me in line, consistent, and in check. as a Christmas gift and an early birthday gift, I would love it if you would leave a review on Apple Podcasts for me. Please subscribe to the podcast and share it with your friends. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Millennial Health Podcast. Though my goal is to share some valuable information and draw awareness to some important health issues, I encourage you to please consult your physician for personalized medical advice. I hope this information was beneficial to you. And if so, please subscribe to the Millennial Health Podcast and share with your friends. Please also leave us a review. If you have questions or comments, feel free to reach out on Instagram or Twitter at Dr. Jay Sheree, DrJaySheree.